Peter R. Bregan, M.D., is called the conscience of psychiatry for his many decades of successful reform efforts. His scientific and educational work provide the foundation for modern criticism of drugs and ECT, and lead the way in promoting more caring and effective therapies. His books include Talking Back to Prozac, Toxic Psychiatry, Medication Madness, Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal, and now, Guilt, Shame, and Anxiety, Understanding and Overcoming Negative Emotions. Welcome to the Dr. Peter Bregan Hour.
Well, folks, you're looking at Tom Renz, my wonderful, wonderful audience. This man, oh my God, so many of us hold him in high esteem. Someday he may be a historic figure. He's very shy about it. He got into this out of the goodness of his heart. He's an amazing lawyer, and he's taking on America's freedom on every relevant legal level he can find in the most important ways related in particular to COVID-19, to medical practice. Many of you have seen Tom on this show before. He's been on the Dr. Peter Bregan Hour. He's also been on short videos. So you're watching him develop from this quiet lawyer who just looked at life and said, I gotta do something, nobody else is. And who now has a wonderful, large, active working group supporting him. Hi. Welcome aboard, sir.
Peter, you make me sound so much more important than I am. God's had my back on this every step. I'm just kind of showing up.
Well, you've shown up big this time, sir. I'm looking at a petition for temporary restraining order. This is brand new in the United States District Court of Northern District of Alabama. I'm sure there are reasons for going there. And I want to read you something briefly from the opening. It's attributed to Benjamin Rush. He was a founding father, a signer of the Declaration of Independence, a personal physician to George Washington, and the father of American psychiatry, which is a sin. But these men all had problems. They're human beings. And Ben Rush, if it really was him, said these marvelous words. And then Tom's going to talk for the rest of the hour. So loosen up there, sir. So this goes back to the founding of our nation. The Constitution of this Republic should make special provision for medical freedom. To restrict the art of healing to one class will constitute the Bastille of medical science. I mean, here is this man saying this a long time back. You know, we can't restrict the art of healing to one class. All such laws are un-American and despotic. Unless you put medical freedom into the Constitution, the time will come when medicine will organize into an undercover dictatorship and force people who wish doctors and treatment of their own choice to submit only to what the dictating outfit offers. Wow, that is about as prescient as you can get. I'm gonna sit back now and rest. Let me just say one last thing in my own service. Today, actually yesterday, I finished writing basically. Ginger is co-author, she's mainly editor-in-chief, thinker-in-chief, researcher-in-chief. But I finished the writing of the basic book, COVID-19 and the World Predators. And it's a relief to have it done, gone to copy editing. It'll be coming out soon. But if you buy the book now in advance, like thousands of other people have done, you will get the almost identical manuscript that just went off to be copy edited. So you're going to get very up-to-date information, and you can buy the manuscript on the dedicated, and the book when it comes in July, and on a dedicated site, wearethepray.com, wearethepray.com, or go to bregan.com. but wearethepray.com. And if you go there and you buy the book, it's really at a reduced rate, and you press the button to buy it within a very short time, maybe seconds, maybe minutes, in your email will be the book with all 900 plus citations and all my heart and soul in it. And that's all the references today to me, I hope. Tom, tell us what in the world you're doing. I have looked at this document. It looks like you have a cadre of some of the best researchers in the world looking at conflicts of interest in the federal government. I found that fascinating. But tell us all about it from scratch.
Well, I do. I don't. This document is basically me standing on the shoulders of giants. I've got a whole bunch of very smart people that have made me look like I know what I'm doing.
You sure do look like you know what you're doing. We'll accept the utter mistaken belief and let you just fly, because you should be flying, sir.
Well, we're going to go with it because we have to, you know. So it is. It is. You know, 9-10 days ago, they decided that they were going to make this monstrous injection available for children. They did it without proper testing, without any legal basis for the authorization, and they did it despite the fact that they know informed consent's not being had, and they know the kids don't need it. They're statistically, using CDC statistics, there's statistically zero risk to children under 16, zero. Okay, so under the law, under the plain language of the law,
we're talking about vaccines. I don't think we've used the word yet, but he's talking about the vaccines. Those are the terrible things he's talking about. Go ahead.
Yeah. So I kind of try and avoid the word vaccines because I don't think these are vaccines. I don't know what they are, but I try and avoid calling these injections vaccines because they aren't. Right. Literally, by the way, the CDC and a bunch of others changed the definition of the word vaccine so that they could call them vaccine. I mean, it's unbelievable. We've gone so far as to change the definition of words, but they also changed the definition of what it means to die with a disease. You know, so I guess we shouldn't be surprised. But, you know, they decided they were going to do this. They spring this on everybody. And so as soon as this happened, I start out with Ohio Stands Up, and I'm still working with them. I'm working with MAFA, Make Americans Free Again. And I just started working with America's Frontline Doctors, which is Simone Gold's group. And as soon as this happened, Simone just, I mean, they couldn't take it. You know, these are people who've sworn an oath to do no harm. And, you know, I'm going to tell you, these people, these doctors, these frontline doctors, they hold that oath very, very seriously. I mean, they take it super seriously, and they should. They should. They said, what can we do about this? This has to stop. They said, we'll do whatever it takes. And so I said, okay, let me see what I can do. And so I came up with this cockamamie plan to fight it, because, you know, I agree with them. We can't let them kill kids.
Yeah.
Kids should not be the subject of experiments.
So, yeah, they shouldn't grow up with an injection of something that is changing their basic RNA manufacture of proteins, which is what these mRNA creatures do, and that infests every cell of their body and makes every cell of their body abnormal in its production of protein to make what's called a protein spike, which is mimicking the protein spike on SARS-CoV-2, and which is literally producing this stab inside one's own body so that supposedly your immune system can fight it. The problem are so multiple that one of the most basic problems of all is that this protein stab is itself harmful. It used to be thought that all this protein did was allow the virus to get into cells, but that was the purpose of this is just to, you know, be a protein to be attacked because it resembles some of the COVID-19 virus. But no, it's much worse than that. This thing that is being produced in the body is actually itself toxic. And it is invading, coming out, not even invading, it's being produced by the endothelial cells of the bloodstream. It causes clotting, we know that, it causes hemorrhage. So I just want to give folks a little picture of that. And you're forever changing the RNA, that strand, one strand of the, not DNA, but RNA, very closely resembling it. And there's a lot of issues about what happens to DNA when you change RNA too. I won't get into all that, but is that okay? I wanted to give the medical right on top of what you're saying here. Well, do you have anything to add to that? Am I covering that danger there enough?
Well, I mean, and you know it better than I do. I'm just, you know, if I was smart enough to understand it, I'd been a doctor instead of a lawyer. No, I think, from all the doctors I've spoken with, that I agree with everything you're saying, you know, to the best of my knowledge. But yeah, it's dangerous. That's the bottom line, you know.
Unpredictably, horribly dangerous.
Yeah, and we don't know. And I pray to God that we're all wrong, and that after it's tested and after it's out there, that it ends up being not as dangerous as everybody I know thinks that it's going to be. But we don't know. And since under the law, the question is this. It's a balance of harms test, right? Mm-hmm. If there's no risk to children from the disease, which there's not, using CDC statistics, mind you, I just couldn't disagree more with CDC statistics. I know they lie about it. But even using their statistics, there's still no risk of harm to children. They don't spread it, they don't get it, and if they do, it doesn't do anything. So, you know, the thing is why would you then take a risk with all these unknowns in a child? Why would you do that? It's monstrous, it's horrible. And I'm sorry, and we do this in the document, and I'm gonna do this now. I think this compares very, very well with what the Nazis did when they tested vaccines on people without informed consent and who didn't have choices. It compares to Tuskegee, and it compares to Guatemala. This is one of the most abhorrent violations of human rights in the history of America. It is unbelievable. I am terrified that when we look at this in historic terms 100 years from now, that we're going to say, oh my God, how did we let this happen? And, you know, we're going to look at the toll that this took on our public, on our population, and say, what happened? Why did we let them do this to people, and especially to our kids? And I'm praying that I'm wrong, but, you know, here's the thing. Since there's no risk for kids from COVID, why not go through the full test? Why not let this get authorized and approved as any other drug would after full testing, after full disclosures? You know, why would we do that? And I'm going to tell you, I'm strongly of the opinion that the answer to that's real clear. They don't care. It's about money. This isn't about safety. This to me looks like a manufactured virus based on the evidence I've seen. I think it was a manufactured crisis. And now guess what they've got? The manufactured solution to the manufactured crisis. You know, so I think this whole thing it just reeks of corruption. We've put that before the court. We're gonna see what happens. And I'm praying to God for justice and for the ability to fight this fight effectively. So there's so much to this, and so many angles and so much depth to this. I hope to God that everybody goes out and does two things today. Buy your book and read my TRO. You need to know what's going on here, and you need to understand, and we need to spread the word. And I sincerely hope that the truth that is in our document that we filed with the court reaches every ear in the world, because people need to understand what's happening.
Yeah, I agree with you about that very much. Now, one of the rationalizations they're trying to use is we have to reach a complete vaccination in order to develop the community immunity to this. And that's fallacious too. Well, first there's the problem of, can you sacrifice a portion of the population for the quote general good like that? It's very, very communist, fascistic. But the more importantly is, from the scientific viewpoint, children don't transmit it to each other or to adults.
No.
They may get it from adults, but there is no evidence of significant transmission. I've talked to Peter McCullough about that, and to many other people who are really in on the science more deeply than I am, and are actually treating children and adults for COVID. So the rationalizations fall apart. We've had, you know, and Peter's talking, Tom is talking about the CDC data. I mentioned in the book that we got some data from the states, reporting, the counties reporting to state governments, and many of them had just no deaths at all in anybody, anybody under, you know, 20, 25 years old, none. And then if there's one or two, you can't rely on that because of the way the CDC counts a death. I mean, if they think you might have, or a doctor thinks you might have had a serious exposure to, or a symptom like a cold of COVID-19, and you get killed in a car crash or shot, it gets on your death certificate, gets counted. So it's really quite a bizarre situation. Is there more you'd like to tell us about the development of this incredible document, which will go into the chronology of the book, folks? Because I'm saving the chronology to put in things that can go in after I've already finished the text of the book. And we get that separately, then additionally copy edited, because I just don't see those mistakes that I make in the writing. I think it's just an extraordinarily important document. And you want to see more about its development or what you anticipate?
Well, so I mean, nuts and bolts of it are this. So we sat down around the table and I talked about kind of this vision for the strategy of it. And talk it up to bad decision making, they decided they liked it. So from there, we worked on and developed kind of this outline of what the document was going to be and how it looked. And then that's where a lot of the farming out began. So, you know, we had teams of doctors and teams of just brilliant people that were putting together all of this work on the fact side of this. Said, okay, so we know that we need to prove this and this and this in the law, right? So I need these facts because they will show this. I need these facts because they will show this, right? And this is how we will be able to prove this under the law. So we did that. And in the meantime, we also had, you know, we had our injured plaintiffs. And so we had some lawyers, particularly a brilliant guy out of Kentucky, Michael Hamilton, who was working on getting the plaintiff stories together and develop. And we had another brilliant attorney up in Maine, Ron Jenkins, who you know, really helped with a lot of the writing and fine tuning of the legal arguments and that sort of stuff. And we all came together, and then we've got our local counsel, Larry Beecraft, and then, you know, we've got the rest of the team, Anna Garner, Jonathan Diener, and Robert Gargas, who all kind of helped with in various capacities throughout. And, you know, in the meantime, we have on the medical side all these people, and on the science side all these people just doing all this research. And Simone did a lot of the coordinating on that. She did it. I mean, Simone's a scary, smart lady. She's a sharp, sharp, sharp cookie. So she did an incredible job of getting things coordinated there. My buddy Joey Gilbert helped coordinate a lot on a lot from a lot of angles. You know, he's out of Nevada. He's another one of our attorneys. And we, you know, end up marrying this all together. And then, you know, we, the pain in the butt lawyers, proofed and put it in terms that we felt were good for the court and appropriate for the court. And they had the doctors check to make sure that what we said was correct and accurate. And, you know, kind of that process goes back and forth. And then you get done and you say four or five more prayers and say, okay, file. And that is the process as it occurred here. Truly, truly a team process. And I'm going to tell you, Peter, I mean, you know this because you've done a lot of writing. Pulling a document like that together in 9-10 days or however long it took.
I was going to ask. That's all it was. Wow.
Yeah. We didn't. We were unable to file a complaint with it. Normally, you'd like to file a complaint with the TRO. We were unable to do that because it was so critical that we stop this in children. The risk of the legal standard is immediate irreparable harm. And there was so much risk in our plaintiffs, for our plaintiffs, of immediate irreparable harm. We couldn't even get the complaint done. We're working on that now. We'll get that in as soon as we possibly can. But we had to get this TRO done immediately to try and save lives and to try and save, I mean, doctors' careers. I mean, all sorts of things. So we flew through this. We literally did that. And I'm a Christian, and I don't care what you believe. I don't care who, you know, about your faith or anything. But it was literally an act of God to pull that much together in that amount of time. And I just am so grateful to have such an incredible group of people I've worked with. And what a privilege to be a part of putting something like this together. So
explain to people what a TRO is.
So a TRO is a temporary restraining order. And usually when you hear about a TRO, you're hearing about it in like a domestic violence situation or something like that. But what it is in legal terms is it's an extraordinary remedy. And by that, I mean, it's hard to get. Getting a TRO and winning it is a very difficult thing. It's an extraordinary remedy that's granted by the courts when there's just this crisis situation, something that, you know, Your Honor, there is going to be immediate and irreparable harm. We got to stop this now. We're going to bring this to trial. We're going to try the whole thing. But right now, this thing needs to be stopped at least until we get to a hearing so that we can, you know, make sure we're saving some lives and saving people and saving all these different things. So we've asked the court for this extraordinary remedy. And that can happen very quickly. Frequently, what will happen is the courts will say, you know, we want to convert this to a preliminary injunction hearing, which is a few extra days. And we're hoping that the court will, we believe that this is so critical and that the case is so strong that we should be able to get a TRO. It's very, very common in the federal courts when you ask for a TRO on such an expedited basis as this, that the courts will say, well, we're going to give, you know, a week for or 2 weeks or something. You give it a little bit of time for a hearing and we'll call it a preliminary injunction hearing, which is an expedited hearing on whether we want to say, okay, let's hold off on this until we complete trial. A true TRO only lasts for a little bit of time, and then it's either converted to a preliminary injunction or removed. But we'll see what happens here. You know, ideally, what we really want to happen is we want to make sure no kids are subject to this experiment prior to to this drug actually being authorized through the appropriate means. If these drugs can meet true clinical tests and true clinical criteria, fine, whatever. We don't believe they can. We don't believe they can reach authorization. And right now, all that's happening is the people who are going to make money off these drugs are saying, they're good, let's authorize it. So we want to hit pause on that until such time as we can, you know, determine whether they're actually safe or effective. And, you know, that's where it is. So as soon as we hear back from the courts, we'll be sure to let everybody know, and then we'll see what happens here. Mm-hmm. In the meantime, we're working very hard on getting the complaint done. We definitely need that done as quickly as possible. And we want to get that into the court. And the complaint is actually going to be even more robust than the temporary restraining order.
God. Well, this is very, very robust. Just so people understand, this TRO is aimed at the Secretary of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the department itself. And that's the overview of the CDC and a whole bunch of other people. I think the FDA is separate, though, isn't it?
No, they're in there.
They're in there too.
Yeah,
good. And it's a very powerful document. You mentioned earlier, you know, comparing it to Nazi experiments in Tuskegee. Oh, you mentioned Guatemala. Tell us about what that reference was, where you were comparing it to Guatemala.
Well, I mean, the very short answer is this. I mean, you know, in Nazi Germany, they experimented on Jews because they were monsters, and that's what they did. In Tuskegee, they experimented on African Americans because they were monsters, and that's what they did. But they got caught in Tuskegee, and that didn't go well for the people. You know, once that came out, it certainly should have went far worse for them than it did. But you know, they realized, okay, so experimenting on people in mainland USA, that's kind of a rough go. We need to find another experimental population, you know, more expendable people. So they decided that they'd try it out in Guatemala. So they did their drug experiments on people down there and let a bunch of people die and, you know, didn't care until they got caught with that as well. And, you know, I might add that there's actually numerous other instances around the world.
Oh, yeah.
Where people, drug companies and in collusion with different governments have just experimented on the population. You know, just people have died, they've become sterilized, you name it. And,
yeah.
You know, unfortunately, this has never gotten the press that it should. But it's no different than what the Nazis did. When you experiment on a person without allowing them to have informed consent, you are violating their most sacrosanct right, the right to their human bodily integrity. This is so, so egregious. This is, you know what, we're going to harvest your organ without your permission. You know, this
the Chinese do that, right?
Yeah. I would compare this. I mean, this is comparable because they're not giving informed consent. And let me tell you this, for anyone watching this that got the jab, first of all, I'm sorry and I pray that you're okay. But second of all, you know, there are people who are going to get it and are going to be fine. Not every single person that gets it is going to die or have these reactions. And hopefully we're all wrong and not many do. But if you've gotten this and you didn't have a reaction, good. But let me ask you this. When you went in to get this injection, did someone set you down and say, let me tell you what's about to happen? We're going to inject this into your arm. This injection is an emergency use authorization only, which means it is not an approved drug by the FDA. It's not been fully tested. We don't know what it's going to do in your body. We suspect, under the terms of the emergency use authorization, that it will reduce your symptoms should you get COVID-19 again. But we don't know that it will actually block transmission of the disease because that isn't even what we tested it for. So you may have side effects, including death, neurological damage, blood disorders, clotting, and numerous other things. We don't actually even know the entire list of potential side effects you may have. The potential benefit is if you get COVID-19, we expect there's a chance that your symptoms will be less. Do you still want to do this? And I'm guessing that anyone that's listening to this that had the experience of getting the jab missed out on that conversation. The reason they missed out is because they're not doing it. I know because we've talked to people all over the country who have either gotten the injection or who are administering the injection. They're not even sharing the true information with people who are administering it so that they can give informed consent, which is in direct violation of the law. The Secretary of Health and Human Services is required, before agreeing to an emergency use authorization, to take steps to ensure that people are informed of the risks and benefits. It's not happening. And in case you think this is political, let me tell you what. It wasn't happening under Trump, it's not happening under Biden, and it won't happen under whoever's next if this disaster is still here. The reason that it's not happening is because the bureaucrats at the Department of Health and Human Services, the esteemed doctors there, are outright lying to everyone. And they're brilliant people who are lying very effectively. So there's a lot of people who are smart, smart people who have bought into this. Now, I'm giving the benefit of the doubt, and I'm giving a lot of benefit here.
Your document doesn't give, it shows how those people, so many of them have conflicts of interest. They can get $150,000 a year, some of the people, the key people in the government, because they have patents on some aspect of the vaccine. And then anything over the $150,000 a year goes to the institutes that they work for, bloating them potentially with millions and millions of dollars. There's so many conflicts of interest. It's just amazing.
Yeah, well, I mean, the esteemed Dr. Fauci makes more money per year than the president. And P.S.
Just in salary, not even, we don't know how much of the $150,000 he's getting from his patents or what other sources. That's right. He is the highest paid person in the government, folks. I think he earns about $450,000 a year. And the perks of the government salary go way beyond that. And the retirement's unbelievable. And he's all right, that fella. He's going to do good.
Yeah, I don't, well, we'll see. We'll see. But he, not only is he, getting that, but his institute is under contract with Moderna and owns about half the intellectual property rights. Moderna, by the way, which has, I believe, zero approved drugs on the market, is now valued at, I think, $25 billion-ish, with no approved drugs. And that's, his institute. So all these people in his institute, they're working for an institute that has that kind of money now. I wonder if they're going to push for approval of this.
Well, Moderna was created in only recently, folks, 2010, for the express purpose of being a place where you could rush through mRNA vaccines. It's that bad. And they started working. Actually, there's a couple of things I would like to bring in that I think people will find interesting. One of them, just two of the smaller and then a really more larger issue here. One of them is that what they're also not telling people in the informed consent is that as of mid-May of this year, 2021, the reported deaths in association with the, almost entirely with the RNA vaccines is now up to 4,500 or more to the CDC, and many of them on the first day and most of them within the first few days. Now, what does this mean? This is what's called a signal. How much of a signal it is? In the book, I point out that there are vaccines that were taken off the market, including the swine flu vaccine, not even for causing deaths, but for causing 100 or so documented neurological diseases, 100 examples of it. And here we have 4,500 deaths. We have other things, vaccines that were taken off the market because of a fear of contamination with no known examples. And that one was put back on the market when they evaluated. Here we have all these deaths, and the CDC is refusing to evaluate them and saying, well, we don't have proof or something. This vaccine should be, whoa, sorry, that was a book falling over. This vaccine should be taken off the market, not only stopped for the kids. So that's one of the things I wanted to mention was the death rates, and they're brand new coming out now. But they've been growing all along. We've been warning about it. The second issue of great importance is that in looking at the Nuremberg Code, it goes beyond the question of informed consent and whether you got information. It goes to, were you capable of giving consent or were you too terrified, intimidated, or threatened? And that's why it was evolved. It was evolved beyond informed consent, because even if the Jews were consenting to freezing experiments and told they might die, it was irrelevant because they had the consent because of the terror of going to the gas stations, indeed, to the crematoriums, the gas chambers. So it's the element of consent under duress. And that's one of the elements that in one of my earliest suits, going way back to Kamowitz in 1972, where I was the medical expert and psychiatric expert, and the court stopped all psychosurgery, this is so relevant to your work, stopped all psychosurgery in the federal facilities, basically, in state facilities, and that has never changed. And the reasoning was that my argument that what I presented to them was the data that state mental hospitals should be compared to concentration camps and extermination camps. So then recently, Ginger has taken it a step further and beat me to the punch, saying to me, well, honey, in America today, it's very totalitarian. People are terrified of not getting the vaccine. They won't get jobs. They won't be able to fly in airplanes. They won't be able to go to ball games. They can't go back to college in many, many instances. So the whole environment around vaccines is you better get them. And the same issues are going to turn up with children. Will they be allowed in school if they don't get them? And so on. So that's yet another issue. But a third issue came up when you mentioned Moderna, which is they were planning all this as early as 2010 and definitively in 2017. So in the book, we do something that's not been done before. We track the planning for Operation Warp Speed by people like Bill Gates and Klaus Schwab. And at the World Economic Forum, at one of the conferences and then later filmed in one of the offices, Bill Gates talks about how he's working with Moderna and he's also working with Pfizer to develop RNA viruses to be rushed through government approval. That's 3 years before it happens. He's describing exactly the conditions of Operation Warp Speed and combining it with Schwab's idea of the Great Reset, which is a fusion between the government and corporations that excludes the normal processes of a democratic republic. And also at that point, they were evolving the concept that America had to be made more submissive. And I don't know that you can deal with that in your presentation, but one of the things we emphasize in the book, that this is all about getting America to submit. Because if they're going to have a global hegemony working with, as it turns out, oh God bless, the communist Chinese, working with our big industries, which they're doing all the time now, all the big industries, the tech industries, the billionaires, with one exception. In the top 10 or 15, I could find only Larry Ellison, a billionaire, who wasn't advocating for China and not advocating for America. All the others are no patriotism. So you've got a thing that has evolved for several decades now with planning way in advance. And then one last thing about the history. In 2017, Bill Gates was talking about a coronavirus pandemic. And in 2017, Johns Hopkins comes out with something that people didn't know about until very recently. We've heard of Johns Hopkins doing this incredible late 2019 war game about a coronavirus. And we thought, well, that's clearly is a prediction. And they said, no, no, that was an accident. 2017, they came out with a white paper on expecting a coronavirus. They actually, and it was all about vaccines, and it was about a vaccine they called COVAX, and it was about how they were going to have to suppress criticism of and fear of COVAX. And they called it the SPARS epidemic, playing on SARS. So all of this was planned, folks, 3 years in advance. And what Ginger pointed out to me, you know, was, look, this is something that is so coercive, it qualifies the Nuremberg Code, not just on informed consent, but on that you cannot give consent when you are so frightened, threatened, and intimidated. And so these are monstrous issues that are going on. They cannot be exaggerated. They can't be exaggerated.
Yeah.
Let me give it back to you, Tom, to add or comment on all that.
Well, I think that it's dead on. I mean, you're right. And let me paint this picture for you, right? Picture a kid, 15 years old. You know, I mean, I'm an old man, so that's a baby to me. So you got a 15-year-old kid in school, worried about their friends, worried about peer pressure, hasn't been able to go to school for a year. I mean, we know that the suicide rate amongst children has just skyrocketed because of what we've done to them.
Oh, far beyond that. Well, there isn't and aren't any deaths, but the damage to them is so immense. And they've got nothing out of the shutdown except misery.
Yeah. So we've shut them down. We've done everything we can to ruin these kids' life for over a year. Finally, letting them go back to school. You have to get this vaccine. If you don't, you're part of the problem. And we push this on these children, these young children who don't have the capacity legally to decide whether they want a tattoo. But you're going to give them the capacity to accept an experimental life-altering drug and then tell them if they don't, they're part of the reason for this. Have their friends coerce them. I'm seeing letters from school districts. I'm seeing what they're doing to coerce these children, to try and push them. It is sick. It is sick to take an experimental biologic that is untested and completely unnecessary. These people, I will draw the parallel again, the people behind this are the equivalent to the Nazis. They are the equivalent to the people who did Tuskegee and who did Guatemala and all of the other places around the world where this has happened. There is no danger to children from COVID. We have no idea what this biologic is going to do to them. Why? And how many parents are going to have to live with the fact that they force their kids into it, that they push this on their kids to keep them safe because they truly believed that they were doing that, and then only to find out that, wait, it wasn't safe and effective. We didn't know. It wasn't even approved. I got a story came in to me just a day or two ago. These parents, and you're familiar with the Pfizer document that indicates that they had concerns about viral shedding?
No, I don't know if I have that or not. Send it to me, would you?
Okay, I will. So there's a document, and we have it in the case, from Pfizer. And during the testing of this drug, they made it a reportable safety event. if a person came in contact with another person who is subject to the study intervention. So what that means in English is if you got the vaccine and someone was around you, or you were around someone who got the vaccine in or around the time of pregnancy, of conception, I'm sorry, it was a reportable safety event. And by in or around, they explain, they give the example, if you were within the area where someone was breathing or skin-to-skin contact. So we don't know what that means, okay? We don't. And I'm going to openly admit that does not in any way, shape, or form prove that there's viral shedding that's dangerous to people. What it does do is gives us a real question to ask, and the question is, why in God's name hasn't Congress ordered full disclosure of any and all testing or concerns related to this period immediately? And I'm going to tell you why this is such an issue, Peter. So I know you're hearing this. You're hearing about these kids who haven't gotten the vaccine, you know, especially little girls who are, you know, 3 to 5 years old and having menstrual cycles because they're around people who got the vaccine. I got a report, and I can't confirm that this has anything to do with viral shedding. I want to be clear about that. But these two parents apparently went and got the vaccine. Within a week, their baby, who didn't get it, died. Their perfectly healthy baby, no health issues, got it, dies from this. So we don't know for sure if the causation is shedding. We don't know for sure what's going on. But I have a Pfizer document that indicates that on some level they had concern about this, right? Where's the disclosure? Where's the investigation? I mean, we see people having reactions. What are we doing? You know, why all the secrecy? You know, this is unbelievable what's happening here. And we're just throwing this out there and giving it a shot on the public. And you know what? I hesitate to use the word vaccine because a vaccine has always been defined as, you know, sticking some almost dead virus in you so that your body can develop an immune response. The Moderna CEO, as you probably know better than me, you know, gave a speech talking about mRNA being the key to reprogramming the human genome. I mean, this is not a traditional vaccine. It is a brand new, totally experimental thing, and it is insane that we're just giving it a shot like this. So, you know, I really want to know what's going on, and I really think that the American people have a right to know what's going on, and not disclosure from self-interested, conflicted DHHS people, but the truth. There needs to be an independent examination and audit of everything related to this. There's no way any vaccine in history would have been approved at all, even under emergency use, in these conditions up until now. So what's going on? And that's what we're fighting.
Well, the what's going on is what our book does better than any other document. Again, you can get our book at the www.wearethepray.com, wearethepray.com, and you'll immediately get the manuscript that gives you what in the world is going on. It's about the global predators. One of the documents that we found, one of these planning documents that was published and circulated among many universities before was published, actually talked about and advocated a new way of doing vaccines, which is you just vaccinate a small group of people who then shed the virus to the whole community. I don't know if you've seen that document. I can send that to you. It's when Ginger and I looked at that, it was at Ginger long ago said to me, long ago, during COVID-19, said to me that, yeah, you know, yesterday's conspiracy theories are today's headlines, and today we could add to it today's scientific principles, because this this is like everybody's worst nightmare, that you vaccinate the population just by making a few people sick and spreading the offending agent throughout. And the same document said, and there is a chance that the virus that we've given people could deteriorate into something really pathogenic. It actually discussed all this, and they called it a public relations problem.
Yeah.
So this is the twistedness of the people we're dealing with out there with these issues. I want to make sure, we've still got some time. We've got about 8 minutes, Tom. We're talking with Tom Renz, R-E-N-C. Give some, just the various ways people can get in touch with you. And is there a specific way, if they want, they can get this amazing document that you have just given to the court?
Yeah, absolutely. So this was filed on behalf of America's Frontline Doctors, and the document is up on their website, and you can't miss it. And I've asked them, I think, I don't know for sure, but I think we're going to get and post the citation. Everything that we cited in this document, we're going to put all that up there too, I believe. And that'll be great because, you know, I'm going to hear the left-wing media out there telling me that I'm a conspiracy guy, and I'm going to say, well, there's the documents. Go take a look, because it's hard to erase most of them.
Yeah.
So we're gonna do that. And then, you know, I'm working with Make Americans Free Again, so you can check there, and you can also check Ohio Stands Up. I don't know if it's up on my website yet or not. I think it is. But, you know, please read it and share it, because you know, I'm praying to God that we've got a good venue and that, you know, our judge sees the justice in what we're doing and that we're able to win this. But regardless, I pray every person in the world gets the opportunity to know what's in this document, because they need to understand they're lying to you. It is illegal. If Pfizer claimed that this was safe and effective, Pfizer would get sued tomorrow. So if Moderna came out and said this is safe and effective, they'd get sued if they tomorrow. But these scumbags that own half the intellectual property right on it, that are government bureaucrats, are saying it for them and trying to claim governmental immunity on it. Well, you know, God willing, that won't stand. God willing. We'll see what happens. But, you know, please, share this, educate people. This is scary, scary stuff. I don't know what's going to happen. I really don't. I hope that we're all wrong and that this this vaccine hurts almost no one, and that we all go about our lives and everybody calls me the conspiracy kook and I was, you know, we're, you know, whatever. I'm scared that it won't, that won't come to pass. I'm really scared that 100 years from now, this is going to be a historic thing that we look back on. And, you know, hopefully by then, you know, the entire truth has came out and they're not lying to everybody and saying, oh, it was just a real bad COVID. And that it was actually, because guess what? We know what's coming next, right? This fall, these new, more virulent strains are going to be coming.
Yeah, there's just more money's coming. More expensive vaccines forever, because coronaviruses mutate like crazy. They're such a highly mutating, they don't mutate into something that attacks human beings. That's out of the lab. They don't mutate in that way. By the way, I cannot find a single scientific study showing that the coronavirus ever existed in nature. That is the SARS-CoV. That I cannot find it. This is one of my most recent things. I passed it around. Nobody can. There is no evidence for any SARS-CoV ever in nature. That's now a very big issue that I've just gotten to the book. Not even the SARS-CoV epidemic down in, that we had a much smaller one in 2002, 2003, 2004, and can't trace that to anything but an area of China. There is just no evidence. All the searching of thousands and thousands of bats and thousands of various viruses in the bats has ever shown in China an actual SARS-CoV. So that's very interesting. Let me end with something, which is I've never said on TV before, but you're to blame for my book, you know.
And, I'm sorry, but I'm also grateful.
And, you made me work on a book for like, I don't know how many months. This is the first day I've been free of the book since you made me. And the way he made me is that he asked me to do a report for his case in Ohio and to stop the miserable governor of Ohio from all of his emergency edicts. And I ended up getting so deeply involved, I wrote a 120-page report for your case, which you submitted to the court. And we looked at that, Ginger and I, and we said, it ain't far from a book. Well, it turned out to be pretty far from a book because that was in August, and I think, and now I've finished writing the book and it'll be out in July. So it's taking a year of just such intense work. What is the status of the case now? I mean, just your bringing the injunction stopped him from doing new emergency edicts, right?
Yeah, so we ended up having to, that's the only case that we had to remove, although your work is still going to be a very important aspect of a lot of our work in a lot of other places. There is no emergency in Ohio anymore.
No.
So we removed the case.
Well, wait a minute. Did he stop declaring emergencies or what?
So we voluntarily withdrew the case to refile as a strategic legal, as part of our legal strategy, right? In the interim, before we were able to refile, he got rid of the emergency.
Their case worked really.
Oh, well, I would say it worked very well. So then he reissued new orders, but he didn't issue them under an emergency. There's no emergency in Ohio.
Oh, God.
These
guys are so slimy. Do you see slime coming off of them?
Oh, you know what he just did, don't you?
Oh,
he's now, without asking our legislature, he's decided that he has the power of the purse and is offering a $5 million lottery for people who get vaccinated. He doesn't mind. No, don't worry about the fact that he's discriminating against any religious sect that doesn't believe in vaccination and that he's discriminating against anyone who under the ADA can't get this vaccination. He doesn't care about that. But I mean, he demonstrated that anyways when he decided that he was going to put out town halls based on race to try and get people to take this vaccine. The guy is a bigot and a monster. I've got no use for this guy. I can't wait until he is no longer our governor.
But this is a victory. We got to finish now, but I don't hear you claiming loud enough a victory. You at least forced him out of that emergency mode, and now the rest of his sliminess is being exposed. Is that correct?
I mean, I can't take credit for a victory unless someone says you won, but I'm quite happy that there's no longer an emergency in Ohio.
Well, congratulations. I will take that for you. Congratulations, Tom Renz, for a victory in Ohio. And God bless you, and God bless America. And I'll give you a last 20 seconds just to say goodbye to folks.
Everybody, thank you. Share it, fight it, keep fighting. We've got to save our future, our kids, our families. Save them.
Thank you, Tom Renz.